Welcome back to Dave's Gone By, and we're going to get a little crazy in our next segment, but maybe not directly. We're going to get someone who deals with crazies in a crazy way. We've got a psychologist, or actually, is it a psychologist or a psychiatrist here?
Psychologist.
So I can't get any drugs from you? Which is
no, I can take drugs, but I'm not allowed to dispense them.
Darn. Why didn't I invite him? Anyway, the fellow we have in the studio is Drew Velting, and he is a psychologist, and yeah, there are a million psychologists out there, but how many of them are also stand-up comedians, and how many of them who are stand-up comedians and psychologists do their bits in front of lunatics and in front of the really, really decrepit and aged? Well, I found one. His name is Drew Velting. He's in the studio with us in the neighborhood. Drew, welcome. How, what, where, why, what, ha, tell.
Thanks, Dave. Well, it's a pleasure to be here, and I kind of fell into the comedy piece. I've been a psychologist now for over 10 years, and always seemed to find myself doing stand-up when I was teaching. I taught at Ball State University, also taught some courses at Stony Brook when
all right,
I was
first of all,
there.
Before we go further, can you make a Ball State joke? Because Ball State, you have to.
Yes, Ball State, Ball U is a T-shirt that you see people wearing often, and of course that has other meaning. Dave Letterman is, alma mater, and it was wonderful being there for 2 years.
So you were bald for a couple of years there.
A few years, and then we decided to leave East Central Indiana. It was hard to part from there, but we came back to New York, my wife and I. And then just about a year and a half ago, about 2 years ago, I started writing material seriously, actually not really seriously, humorously, and then started to perform. And performed at my first nursing home show in North Belmore at the Bel Air Care Center. You may have heard of that venue.
Right, okay.
And that was in April of 06, I believe.
So it's all relatively recent here.
It is.
So some of those people may even still be alive.
Some may be. I have some fans who write to me, recreation directors.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
But how did you get the gig? I mean, did you just write to them and say, guys, you know, you're desperate, and Barry Manilow ain't going to play here, but I can, or
something along those lines. I called the recreation director directly and asked her if she would like to have some entertainment, and she asked me a bit about it, and I mentioned that I was relatively new, and she said, sure, why not? The price is right. It was free.
Oh, well, yeah, there you go.
So that's often a very big selling point. And from there, it's just taken off. I was looking last night at my schedule. I've done 18 shows since March of this year.
Oh, wow.
And I'm, as you may know, I'm in the middle of my long-term care tour. 2 weeks doing 7 shows to celebrate National Nursing Home Week, which is just finishing up this week.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, I had no idea until a few months ago myself. But
so what are some of the places, the real hot gigs you've played?
The hot gigs. I've played the Parkview in Massapequa,
yes,
which is a very large venue. And funny story there. I opened by telling the folks there that it was great to be in Massapequa. And there's a young woman, early 60s.
Well, there's a joke right there. Okay.
There you go. Well, that's right. But a young woman in the front row said, "Where is that?" Very seriously.
Oh dear.
And so I tried to be diplomatic. I said, "I think that's where we are now." And to that she responded, "You mean you don't know?" So that got a very big laugh,
yeah,
though, and it was a great great show. I've done, just this week, I did the Fairview in Forest Hills. It's a very nice show,
right
off the Grand Central Parkway there.
Mm-hmm.
And I love doing nursing homes, Dave, but I am working my way up to assisted living, so the big time.
So, I mean, is it because you're new at this and you figure it's an audience that would be receptive to someone coming up there and drooling on a phone book? Or I mean, I'm not trying to be cruel.
Oh, no.
I am trying to be cruel, actually. Or is it that and the fact that, hey, this is an audience that may not get entertainment. There's, a lot of them are still very savvy, and why not?
Exactly. Well, I did start off with the intention of finding a venue. And you may know, and being in theater and so forth, that stage time is precious.
Yeah.
It's difficult to get stage time. Comics fight tooth and nail for it. And so I thought, gee, this is an opportunity. It's a fairly non-threatening audience most of the time. And so it does offer you a chance to try out material. I have been heckled, however.
Oh, come
on. I have
to
say. I have been heckled, Dave. And I'd say...
Heckling does not include calling us, I'm dying.
Well, right. I guess that's all how you define, yeah, operationally define heckling.
My spleen. That's not heckling. That's, you know, desperation.
Well, right. And some of the patients are not, you know, they may be over-medicated or impaired cognitively. I know I'm somewhat cognitively impaired, so it's not surprising in a nursing home.
Welcome to the club. But what did the hecklers say to you?
I had one show, a woman indicated very strongly that she didn't think I was very funny. I asked her, she couldn't remember why, which, so, of course, this is a wonderful way also, I didn't mention, to generate new material for shows elsewhere. And, I was at another, the Parkview, I mentioned a woman mentioning that she didn't know where we were. I was trying to do a procrastination joke at one home, and a woman asked me how do you spell that? And she caught me off guard, actually.
Yeah.
And
you told her, I'll look it up, I'll tell you tomorrow.
Exactly, yeah, right. Okay. I said, couldn't you wait until after the show?
Right.
Right,
right.
Or something like that. But it's a lot of fun.
Have you done, besides, I mean, you said you're working your way up to assisted living, as a joke, sort of, but have you tried places like the Brokerage and quote-unquote real comedy club venues?
Sure. I did an improv class at the Brokerage. I'm hoping to do either an open mic or some kind of a show there.
Or an emergency CPR session.
That's right. Or what they call a bringer show, you know, where you bring a few people to the show and you schedule that. I've been at the New York Comedy Club a few times. I've appeared there in a talent showcase. And I've been at cafes in the area, the Grind Coffee House, which is
so
in Belmore.
Is there a difference really between playing for an audience of 70, 80, 90-year-olds and playing for an audience of 30, 40, 50-year-olds?
Sure. I think that certainly in my I enjoy humor that tends to be more subtle when I can get away with it.
Sure.
Sometimes it's a bit too subtle and it flies over people's heads, even at a comedy club. There, the challenge is that people may be sedated with other types of chemicals. But at a nursing home, certainly a number of people will be impaired cognitively or medicated or sleepy. And I've had to tread lightly in terms of the subtle stuff. Sometimes I have to hit people over the head with material that's a bit more corny.
Like what?
I'm not very athletic, which is accurate, and never did well, but I tried water polo,
really?
Which I enjoyed until the horse drowned, and then so it's that kind of a thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, you need a snare drum for that.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, I've been at nursing homes where the residents will laugh, but then they'll tell me that it's corny, so they'll comment on the joke. And every once in a while, you'll see a few residents will get the more subtle stuff, and you can tell that they're more intact cognitively. But it's a lot of fun, and it's I am seriously working my way up toward other venues.
But is it true that I get this at the theater just regularly when I go to a show, especially a comedy, every single punchline, you're going to hear someone around you repeat the punchline because either they're laughing at it or they're telling the person next to them that he fell in the water.
Right, right.
Does that happen every single joke in a nursing home?
It doesn't happen every single joke. I mean, I there are shows that I go to and there's absolutely no response, which is always...
Those are called funerals.
Funerals, yes, thank you, that's right.
So literally.
Literally. And it is a wonderful... opportunity to learn how to bomb. So if you're a new comic and you want to experience that, certainly you'll see that. It's a bit different, but, you know, flat affect, no response, and...
Has anybody flatlined at one of your... literally, I mean, has...
No. that hasn't happened. There was a man coughing at the last show I did, and it was really disturbing my timing because I was, you know, every time I'd get to through a setup, he'd seem to cough.
Oh.
And I was empathic, but... couldn't do anything. So no one's flatlined. I'm reluctant to say that I've killed at a nursing home because, exactly.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping that won't happen. I've accidentally tripped over wheelchairs and other things like that. Certain hazards.
That's a good gag.
Yeah, it is. It's
do you do any visual humor, or is it all... Because prop humor, I think, would go over.
I've considered it, and I was thinking about that recently. I haven't taken that step, but almost there. I've actually considered bringing a laugh track with me to some of these shows because sometimes there is no laughter, frankly.
Ay, ay, ay.
So I leave those shows wondering, why am I doing this? But it's.
How long is a nursing home gig? Does it is it an hour, or would it assume maybe closer to 40 minutes or something like that?
I'll do anywhere from 15 minutes to a half hour, depending on how much material I have and how they're holding up. And one of the challenges is for the recreation directors that it takes a while to bring everyone down to, let's say, a rec room,
because
they're wheeling them in and they're setting them up. And and when they wheel them in, I then I can leave them rolling in the aisles after the show. So at least
literally,
have that opportunity. Yeah. Literally,
that's the fifth time I've said literally in this interview.
it's a good word.
We are talking with Drew Velting, a psychologist. Is a psychologist the same as a psychotherapist, or are they different? I can't even.
Well, a psychologist can be a psychotherapist. A psychotherapist can doesn't have to be a psychologist. I'm a PhD.
Oh, is that
in clinical psychology, whatever that means.
And you've got, I mean, you've got some serious legit things. I see Columbia University in there somewhere.
I do. I was faculty at Columbia in the Child Psychiatry Division for a few years.
Oh, wow.
And left and actually have an industry job. I work for a pharmaceutical company now on the medical side. Mm-hmm. But this is my avocation, and I'm hoping it grows. But I am a psychologist. Funny, somebody once mentioned to me and said, wow, you're a PhD? Almost. So I said, I was mildly insulted. I said, is it really that hard to believe that I have a PhD? He said, no, I think that's great. And I said, well, it's really not that big a deal. Dr. Phil has one of these, too.
Let me ask you, have you, on a very, and I'll use the word literal again, or in an actual demonstrable sense, have you found out that laughter is the best medicine, or is laughter nice and that's it?
I think laughter is a good medicine. I think Vicodin also is especially useful in some respects.
Yeah.
But I do think that there's certainly some evidence that the laughter, the response that you get that we call laughter, which has a lot of physiological aspects to it, really can make a difference in terms of immune system functioning and mood regulation. I think it really can bring people up and help people safeguard against stress or cope with stress. I use it myself.
Really, yeah.
As a coping strategy, I guess you'd say, broadly defined.
And you have kids, right? You have a wife and kids and all that?
We do. My wife is also a clinical psychologist, so you can imagine some of our conversations.
And you have a son.
We have
you
a
name
son.
Otto?
Yes, his name is Otto.
What?
And
are you trying to drive him into therapy later?
I think we're trying to drive both children into therapy, Adelaide and Otto.
He's Adelaide and Otto?
And Otto, yes. Very old-fashioned type of names. Adelaide is 5, Otto is 2, and
well, you ought to be.
And you, that's
thank you very much.
Thank you. Very good. There we go. Snare drum. So it's great. I mean, I think the fact that they do have two, both of their parents are clinical psychologists, puts them at a disadvantage, so they may not have a chance of having a normal life just by virtue of that.
I have to wonder, like, when you and your wife have an argument about whatever, is it different from a normal couple having an argument? Because are you analyzing everything? Well, I think a normal couple does that anyway.
I think we do it.
But do you also then have this other layer of everything you say and everything she says?
Oh, sure.
You're paging through Freud, Jung, and Groucho.
You're projecting. No, you're defensive now. This is reaction formation. No, you're, So it does. It can
is that when you start hitting each other with forks?
We try not to. We try to be more civilized, but we might do some projective testing at that point and take turns on the couch.
Now, one of the things that you tried to sort of get your name out there at some point had to do with the insanity defense for parking. I mean, explain.
That was actually a joke. It was just a blurb on the webpage, actually, to tell people how I transitioned into not practicing anymore. I actually don't practice per se.
Well, you've done it long enough. You shouldn't have to practice.
That's right. Right. I should be okay by now. Not perfect, but yeah, there we go. But I do think about patients. I don't see them anymore. I see them in my mind at times. But
that's scary.
Yes, and of course we have our own psychologists and psychiatrists have our own problems and mental health issues.
Oh, so what issue do you have? What have you been diagnosed as by your therapist? Since all therapists have to have a therapist.
Of course.
What does he diagnose you as?
Well, let's see. I'm probably more on the obsessional side.
Oh.
And
the reason you've been touching yourself incessantly while we've been talking.
That's right. That's a compulsive behavior or ritual, which helps to neutralize some of the anxious thoughts that I'm having.
Oh, there you go.
Which is helpful. I've been talking to myself a lot more lately. I do that. But I've decided that when it happens next, I'm going to say something. So
I think all comedians actually do talk to themselves, because there's that, they're checking every sentence and every, you know, line of how it's going to play.
Very sensitive and exactly, very thoughtful. Hi, I'm Drew Velting. I'm New York's funniest psychologist, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB.
Before we get towards the end of this, I want to know your opinion and your thoughts on the way, and I'm very much involved in this, that comedians on the radio are being hammered and censored and pulled off and suspended and all these things. Any thoughts on where comedy is going for them, and also, I guess, nightclubs with Michael Richards and all that?
Sure. I think that, well, certainly there's been a swing toward humor that is more out there and kind of in your face. And I know a lot of comics who are now more local and regional comics who are starting to veer toward clean comedy, which I think it's an angle and a way to market yourself and position yourself relative to what may be out there in terms of the mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be a smart way to do that. And I've actually performed at a Christian cafe where the rules are very explicit in terms of what you can say.
There's no coffee, just water. Yeah.
There's only water and water and bread. You know, personally, I think someone like Michael Richards went too far. I think he tried to turn it into a joke at some point where he realized he had gone a bit.
Blown it, yeah.
Oh, right. And I think that made it worse, because I did see the video clip. It's used, I'm sure. I think that, you know, censorship is a huge issue, as you know, and, you know, the censorship is a problem for comics, because they have to walk a very fine line, and it's the edge is really what makes many people funny. I mean, Richard Pryor, there are so many people, George Carlin, you know, pushing
Chris
the envelope.
Rock, and I mean,
Chris Rock,
in
exactly.
Modern times, yeah.
Right. I'm dating myself. But
you're dating yourself. I hope your wife knows.
That's right. Well, I talk to myself. Why not date myself?
Hey, actually, let's to close this out.
Sure.
I'm going to be a 90-year-old senile man. And I want you to try, just for the heck of it, why don't you try doing some of your stuff?
To make you
and
laugh?
Make me laugh. I want laughter in my life now.
Okay. I'd love to, can I call you Saul? There we go, the coffin. Yeah. So, well, it's wonderful to be here and trying to make you laugh, and I hope it's not too painful for you guys. I do have, my wife is a psychologist. We have my wife is a psychologist, so we have two children. 5 and 2, and they're great kids, although they don't mind most of the experiments that we conduct, you know, at least since we stopped shocking them.
You were shopping them there?
Shopping them. We go to Rite Aid. That's quite often. Rite Aid.
Uh-huh.
And my family is crazy. I have an uncle who was a suicidal narcissist. He just loved himself to death. That's, you know.
Are you who
he
is?
He just
hello?
Loved himself to death. And
my pills.
My dad's claustrophobic.
Yeah.
You know what that is?
No.
He doesn't like being in confined spaces, so, which is understandable, but he's a bit extreme with the whole thing. Yesterday, for example, he got all upset because I accidentally locked him in the linen closet. So, you know. And that's often the response I will get.
Right. Oh, my goodness. Well, we are talking with Drew Velting, comedian of the aging, but rising towards the not quite so decrepit.
Right.
How do people find out about your stuff? And you don't have a CD or any, you have a book or stuff like that?
I'm working on some books, one book, and it's the title I'm playing with is How Does That Make You Feel? And it's in its early, you know, stages, infancy, but I'm working on it.
And what is it? It's going to be a...
It's a compilation of one-liners and memoirs and parody, and so it's a right now it's finding its way, but I'm basically trying to take most of my material and put it together, most of the psych-related material and put it together.
Very cool.
I do have a website now. It's www.psychcomedy.com.
psychcomedy.com.
Correct.
Cool. Well, Drew Velting, it has been a pleasure having you in the senior neighborhood, as it were. I wish you best of luck, and please keep in touch and let us know how you're doing, and if the age strata of your audience starts going down. Like, by the time you're 90, you'll be playing for infants.
That's right. Really I'm hoping it works out that way. Thanks, Dave. It's been a pleasure.